Alrighty, time once again for Truth About Markets, Christchurch, New Zealand. Max and Stacy here on RDU. My name is Max Kaiser. Say hello to Stacy Herbert.
Hello, Stacy Herbert. Oh, wait, that's me. I'm talking to myself right here on the air in Christchurch.
Well, what do we want to talk about? I'm looking at the Economist magazine, and of course they got BP on the cover, but I think we should jump in and chat a little bit about what's happening with the Chinese yuan.
Yes, so I've read many headlines on this. Apparently, so over the weekend, they said they were going to revalue, allow it to rise in value. But then there were statements from China saying, oh, don't get too excited. We're not going to really revalue it. But Monday, it did rise by 0.5% or 0.4%. So yeah, there you have it.
Right. So America wants China to raise the value of their currency so that America's goods have a better chance of being sold in China, because the value of the dollar would be cheaper against the Chinese currency, right? So the people in China, with their strengthened yuan or RMB, would be able to afford more American-made products. Now, there's a couple of problems with this, Stacy. The problem, number one problem, is that the strength in the Chinese RMB is going to, I think, mean that the Chinese are going to be buying more Chinese-made products instead of buying American-made products, because America, on the manufacturing side, unless you're buying some kind of weapon, or you're buying more weapons, or a Caterpillar tractor maybe, or a Deere tractor, there's not much you might want to buy. Maybe an iPad or an iPod, I guess. But other than that, the rising purchasing power of the RMB in China is actually going to reduce demand for American goods, and it will actually hurt the American economy more than it does any good.
Well, that plus by strengthening the yuan, the renminbi, against the dollar, that will give Chinese more purchasing power in oil. Mm-hmm. And therefore, Americans will have to compete with the Chinese with their stronger currency to buy oil. And remember, over half of the U.S. trade deficit is caused by oil imports.
Mm-hmm.
So it will actually increase it, because the demand for oil will now rise, meaning that there will be more competition for the limited supply.
Yep.
And so, yeah, you could see a situation where it does actually do zero good.
Right. So it'll force price of oil higher, because the Chinese, with a strengthened currency, have a ability to push the price up higher, since oil, after all, is priced in dollars.
That's correct.
Now, Nouriel Roubini was making a comment over there at businessinsider.com. They had a link to it. I didn't read the whole thing. Maybe you did. But he was saying it's also potential negative as it relates to the euro.
Well, their biggest export market is Europe. So he said, China could start, they'll be more concerned about the value of the yuan against the euro. So he was hypothesizing that maybe they might actually lower the peg. They might start to peg it to the euro, because that was one of the things, because none of it is definite yet. We don't know exactly how they're going to do this. But they said they might broaden the peg to not just be so fixed to the dollar, and then introduce some euro to it.
Mm-hmm.
So if they introduce euro to their peg, that could lower the value of the yuan.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, what's this all going to have an impact on the New Zealand dollar? A strengthened Chinese currency, I would think, gives them more ability to buy New Zealand stuff.
Well, that's exactly correct. But also, all the commodity currencies boomed on this news on Monday.
Right. So New Zealand, Australia, Canada, presumably.
Yeah.
The resource-rich currencies. And, of course, Russia has announced again that they're diversifying into the into the resource currencies, particularly Canada. So here you have Timothy Geithner, Treasury Secretary in the U.S., who's really been pushing for China to reform itself from being a, quote, currency manipulator, which of course is absurd because only America with the world reserve currency even could potentially be the currency manipulator, and it routinely is a concern, currency manipulator. So be careful what you wish for, because it seems as though a strengthened China currency has more negatives than positives for the U.S. economy, but it's good for New Zealand economy.
Yes. Well, and also I would think the European economy, because I remember reading a profile about, you know, the increasing, you know, travel abroad by Chinese middle class as they earn more and more. And they're very disappointed when they go to America because, you know, as new consumers, they want to buy stuff. And the people they interviewed for the article was like, everything was made in China. So mm-hmm. they were very disappointed to be in America. Whereas when they come to Europe, of course, you know, many of the goods, many of the clothes and things people would buy and want to travel to is still made here.
All right, let's move over to Britain, shall we? This week, George Osborne, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, number two man under David Cameron, will be releasing his budget for the year. You've got three possibilities: austerity, more stringent austerity, and major league wacko austerity. For example, VAT tax under just the austerity budget, talking about an increase of 10%, or then you might see 15%, maybe 25%. You're seeing that possibility for overall tax on corporations rising to some degree, not yet known. So, okay, here you have Britain is walking down the path away from Keynesian economics, that is to say, flooding your economy with artificial demand from the government to try to tide it over to when it can develop its own demand. They're going down another path, which is, I guess you could call it, what would you call it? Austrian school of economics?
Austerity. Well, I don't know. You know, I'm still trying to get my head around what the austerity is. I see that they're cutting back like the child tax credits.
Yeah.
So what this was people, you know, and I know quite a few of them earning £100,000 a year, £75,000 a year, and they get £2,000 back from the government because they have a child.
Right.
You know, I don't know. It seems a little bit crazy.
Well, the increase in population, of course, you've got the demographic time bomb, as it's called, in places like Japan, where, you know, you need a new generation of people to pay into retirement benefits. Otherwise, the Ponzi scheme that is Social Security and other retirement programs collapses because the money to pay out the current beneficiaries runs out if you don't have new people coming in. So if your population is net negative and there's nobody coming up like you see in Europe and in Japan, then all those pension programs go bust. So there's an incentive to get lots of people, you know, procreating, you know.
Well, the UK has a mass immigration, though. They've had total open door policy. And this is like the population from Europe has just been totally open door. Whereas, you know, France and Germany and other European countries weren't opening their doors so much to the new EU members. So, you know, the whole demographics of the UK have changed significantly over the past few years. Many Polish in particular came
right
to the country.
Well, I mean, that brings up an interesting question, economically speaking, because on the one hand, you would welcome the immigrants as the new generation to keep the American or the British dream percolating. But people have bought into the big macro global warmongering defense contract meme generating clash of civilizations concept, which is negative for immigration. So when we come back here in a few seconds, we're going to be picking up on this meme ourselves for part two, Truth About Markets, Christchurch, New Zealand, with Max and Stacy. So don't go away on RDU. Every week at this time, we bring you the most elongated pre-break segue ever uttered by this co-host as we try to hit the exact 10-minute mark in a mere 6 seconds. But that's going to... Don't go away!
Hello, we're back.
Yeah, so we're talking about the conflict of interest between economics versus something other than economics. I mean, you got...
how do you get out of the Ponzi scheme? By the way, the UK not only has European immigrants, but they have total open-door policy to oligarchs of any persuasion from around the world. If you loot your country, you've got a safe haven and a mansion waiting for you right down there in Chelsea and Kensington, including anybody from New Zealand. You want to move to London? Just deplete New Zealand of its resources, and they will give you a home to hide. I see that the former dictator of Kyrgyzstan, his son is hiding out in London, and they're trying to have him extradited, but London's refusing. So,
yeah, okay, but I think we got to follow up on this idea between economics and ideology. Right?
Yeah, well, there is no real ideology. Ideology is just like soul, that's propaganda.
Right, but it has an economic consequence. I mean, so...
Sure.
In the UK or in Europe, let's say in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've gotten hard right, and they are vilifying immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, that's an ideology, but... economically, if they cut off their population growth, then they're going to not be able to pay their pension benefits, beneficiaries, anything. So you're sacrificing one, you know, there has to be either, you have to have either economically generated, ideas running your country, or you have to have some kind of ethnic-based ideology running your country, but you can't have both.
It's not ethnic-based. Just things seem to... go in swings and back and forth, you know, whether it's a bear market that becomes too bearish and then it has to swing back up to a bull market when things become overvalued and then things become undervalued.
Okay, but,
and then the same with the Netherlands. It maybe went too far to open door, very liberal, very like laissez-faire for everything. And this is a swing back to the other way. And then,
okay, but let's talk about the United States for a second. So here you have a country that the birth rate is getting down to basically negative. It's hovering around the negative area where it's what is that negative
number?
Not
the U.S. Italy and Italy, Germany, and Japan are not replacing. But America has a lot of immigration and a lot of Mexican population.
You need a 2.0.
Yeah.
Birth rate is sustainable. Anything over 2.0, you're growing, and under 2.0. You're shrinking, right?
Yeah, in Europe, the economists just said, I guess they're replacing only two-thirds. Each generation is getting two-thirds smaller.
Right, and now in Japan, which is, I think, one of the worst.
The worst. Perhaps right. Italy is just as bad, but I don't know.
Okay, and so Japan has been 20 years in deflation, in part because they don't have the new people coming in to inflate the economy with new tax base, new jobs, because they're shrinking, they're deflating. The population is deflating, and thus the economy is deflating.
Yeah, well, we have to find, obviously, eventually the population all over the world will deflate because it reaches a point where not only do women not want to have, you know, 7 children or 6 children or 4 children, and, you know, the population will reach a natural maximum.
Okay. So in the UK, they give couples £2,000 to have a child. Why?
Annual thing, yeah.
Because it benefits, they get more than $2,000 in benefits because the child generates a multiple of that in earnings and tax revenues over the life of the child. So they make out over the life of the child, they make out as a positive return on the £2,000. That's the point of it. That's not because they say, oh, we're just giving you a gift? I mean, it's not a gift. It's an economic consideration. It's a calculated economic, and that's the way they position it. Nobody believes that they're just getting it from Santa Claus.
Well, they kind of do, because it's also a democracy, and they're buying votes of people who are likely to vote. So, you know, the child tax credit, as they talk about it, was originally brought in to help very poor people. So, you know, people earning less than £20,000, a family earning less than £20,000. But it started under Blair. It really went up to, people earning, I guess, like up to £75,000.
All right, let's move on. Because I think that it's demographics is a key component. So here's a picture of George Osborne, and these are the things that he's picking for his economic consideration. One is VAT. Explain what VAT is.
Value-added tax. So it's when you buy things, like you buy, you know, some food at a restaurant, or you buy some clothes, or you buy a car, you have VAT added to it.
All right, so it's a consumption. So it's a tax on consumption instead of income.
That's correct.
Right, and that by curbing income, by curbing consumption, of course, you know, is this a benefit for corporations that sell consumer goods? I mean, they want to sell as many consumer goods as possible. If you're disincentivized to buy an iPhone or an iPad because now it's 10% more expensive because of the higher VAT tax, you might be disincentivized to do so. Then Apple can't make more of their products, and they have to lay people off. So that's the give and take on that one.
But there's another argument on the other side, is that it's one of the easiest taxes to collect, the hardest to avoid in terms of people are able to dodge income tax more easily. It's hard to dodge VAT at the cash register.
Right.
When you buy something.
They had the scandal last year, the VAT carousel.
Yes, that was not people going up to the register. These were suppliers,
right,
who were using arbitrage between Europe and stuff, because they're supposed to get your VAT back if you're selling it somewhere else. And they were working with it. It was just a fraud, like a Nigerian, you know, email fraud.
Right. So that's a VAT tax carousel fraud, which was gaming the VAT tax system. And I believe that they have done a good job in cleaning that up. Now, another possible area for reform is a carbon tax.
Mm-hmm.
So carbon tax, I think, falls into the category of adding more for gasoline plus carbon trading?
I haven't read that. I don't know what they're saying on this. So they want to add carbon tax. I mean, the tax on gasoline in the UK is very high. It's something like 85% of the cost of petrol is tax already.
Right.
So what are they saying? I see taxing carbon worth a go. Designing the tax is not uncomplicated, but it is a promising way forward, according to The Economist. This newspaper has long advocated a carbon tax as the best way to deal with a warming climate. This month, we asked Cambridge Econometrics, an economic modeling firm, to assess the impact of a carbon tax on the economy. To keep things simple and allow for gradual adjustment, we propose that it should raise revenues equal to 1% of GDP by 2020, and that other policies with similar objectives, like fuel duty, subsidies for renewable energy, Britain's membership of the European Emissions Trading Scheme, and so forth, would be abolished or cut back. The results are surprising. A frequent worry about carbon taxes is that they will hurt business and the economy. But in our simulation, Britain's economic performance would improve despite raising an extra £11 billion in net revenue by 2015 and £18 billion by 2020. Our carbon tax, which is £31 a ton. So they're saying £31 a ton, whatever I guess it takes. Like
carbon
emissions. Yeah, so if you're, you know, avocado flown in to London from New Zealand used, you know, a ton of carbon to get there.
Right.
You're going to be paying £31 for that.
Right. £31 a ton. So that's the price of carbon emissions. So we're back in a second. Yeah. All righty then. So carbon tax is 30 a ton of carbon emissions. And this is not carbon trading, which of course would put a price on carbon. Carbon trading, unfortunately, you know, it's an elegant solution. It works for acid rain in the United States. It incentivizes corporations to emit less carbon in a market way within, you know, your overall market economy. But unfortunately, the politicians like Tony Blair famously kept expanding the credits, the carbon credits. He kept giving these carbon credits out like candy for political favors. And in order to have an effective carbon trading scheme, you have to have a limit. You have to say the total carbon emissions for this year is X number of tons, and that's it. We can't go over. But you can't let lobbyists then lobby you to say, oh, we have an exemption here and an override there and a give back there. I mean, that's the problem with markets across the board. Every time they do some kind of reform on Wall Street, all these banks get an exception. They say, well, it's all great. You know, we're definitely going to reform, except in the case of everything we've already done and everything we want to do. And there's just nobody in any, that's a problem with free market capitalism, is that nobody's willing to impose the necessary limitations that make it work. And it has devolved into a mudslinging contest, unfortunately. And there's nothing wrong with capitalism if it's properly managed, but nobody's willing to manage it in the UK or anyone else.
Yeah, but you yourself have gone onto television and been interviewed many times in the media about the Hollywood Stock Exchange and Cantor Exchange, and you're totally ranting, saying that this is a, you know, it's going to all sorts of disaster will happen because of the nature of markets at the moment.
Well, so, this is in the case of trading a trend exchange or box office futures trading. You have no laws of supply and demand at all functioning within that market. You've got a commodity, which is a box office dollar, which is generated purely from marketing. If, in fact, no marketing dollar was done for that commodity, they would have an intrinsic value of zero. So here you've got that vicious feedback loop of perception driving valuation, which is, by definition, market manipulation. And there's no place for that in an organized exchange, especially within the context of the current framework of various exchanges, which are completely, as I said, a mudslinging contest and without any rules or regulations whatsoever. So that's just would be the icing on the corrupt cake, would put into another layer of even less transparent, highly manipulated contracts. And interestingly enough, even though I am the creator of the concept, and inventor of the technology, and co-founder of the company, Hollywood Stock Exchange, Cantor Exchange, my comments, which are germane to the debate, if you notice, they have not graduated from the blogosphere to the trade papers like Variety or the Hollywood Reporter or even Nikki Fink's site, Deadline.com in Los Angeles. It shows you the iron grip that these studios have on the media, which means, by definition, again, that they will be in a position to manipulate outcomes.
Yeah, but you have chosen to remain in that position because CFTC.com, you can go there, and they have requested, it's been open for any comments. Anybody on earth could submit a comment regarding the trend exchange and whether or not they should approve it. So you, if you wanted your comments in the public record, that would have gone to the public record.
Well, my comments are in the public record, is what I'm saying. I am a media person. I am a public figure with international television exposure 3 times a week, and I've gone on record.
Well, somebody should send them your comments then.
They have sent me my comments, is what I'm saying, but they choose to play ball purely by the inside game. This is just shows you the extent to which the market is controlled by the very people that this is supposed to be giving an opportunity for a hedge for. You can't, if you have nothing but insiders, you can't have a hedge. You can only have more insider trading. Now, whether this makes it past the Congress this week or not. If it goes through Congress, then this is a whole new chapter in content for our shows because you'll be able to rip this apart on a daily basis. There won't be a single hour of non-fraudulent trading on this exchange, and we'll be happy to cover that for you. But at least going a year from now, when it blows up and people have lost millions or billions and the industry is gutted and they try to trot out that excuse, nobody saw it coming and we had no idea what was going to happen, at least there will be in the record my comments detailing exactly what the problem is, exactly what will happen, exactly what people are doing, and the exact timeline. I'm calling, like Babe Ruth picking a shot for the home run when he pointed to the outfield, I'm saying that within 18 months, you will have a bubble and burst in real time on this exchange if it gets through this week. So that's my shot. If I'm accurate again, I will be the Babe Ruth of prognosticators without equal. All right, so getting back to George Osborne. So in his various choices for policy reform, we covered carbon tax. Here's one. What's this say? Pay cut. Public sector pay cut. So public sector, this would be the bureaucrats, the civil servants?
Yeah, plus they're actually going to start asking them to actually pay more into their pension funds because they get to, they work, I forget the amount, but it's like up to a decade less than a private sector worker. And the private sector workers themselves have, you know, no defined pension benefits anymore. They just have like what they pay in and like at the whim of the market and the whim of, you know, the banking oligarchs, how much they're going to steal from them that quarter. But the public sector has guaranteed benefits. And many private sector workers, I remember that last year they did some study and they showed that private sector workers actually contribute more as a percentage of their pay towards taxes to public sector workers than they do to their own pension.
Yeah.
So there's just this huge divide between, you know, those, these are the this is a classic example though of what happens in corrupt societies.
All right. So then you have a child care cut we covered. Then there's, what does that say? Wiener fuel room, what?
Winter fuel payout.
Winter fuel payout. What is that?
Well, they give a couple hundred pounds a year to old people to make sure that they, and to poor people, I think, to afford fuel.
And this is bus.
Free bus free travel.
Bus travel.
Again, for old people. So they're cutting these things?
That's on the table.
These are all the, basically they're cutting stuff for old people.
The old people are being cut. They're getting the, some of their benefits cut. I read that also old people, admission to the municipal pools.
Really?
They're being cut.
Wow.
It's not a place to be old, Britain.
I guess I'll all be moving here to France. I noticed quite a few of them moving to France.
Put yourself on an iceberg and float out to the Bering Sea. All right. Well, I think we do 28 on this one, right?
That's correct.
Till next time. Bye, y'all.